not hurt me. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings. Nahastan aniva nijon ne ga shavot ya, nijon ne ga shavot ya.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Yeah. the drum Northern Cree off their Canyon Records CD, Nakamu, which means to sing. The name of that powwow song is The Dream. I featured that song as an expression from Yad Kiddush Yenidus Center of the dream we have for the well-being of Mother Earth and for planetary peace and justice. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddush Yenidus Center. Today's program is entitled Justice for Bhopal, Industrial Criminals, Union Carbide, Dow Chemical. Yad Kiddush Yenidus Center as an organization dedicated to cultural, social, economic, environmental justice has a long history of networking with other organizations and campaigns that work for planetary peace and justice. One important effort which we have long been involved with is the International Campaign for Justice in Bhopal. Most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio have heard over many years our coverage of the horrific chemical industrial disaster that occurred on December 3rd, 1984 at the infamous Union Carbide plant in Bhopal, India. More than 20 years later, the struggle for justice for the people and land of Bhopal continues. This is the focus of today's program, where we share a conversation with my friend Ryan Bodani. Ryan represents the organization Students for Bhopal. Students for Bhopal is an international network of students and youth working in support of the victims' case for justice from the Bhopal, India disaster. Bhopal is the capital city of the state of Madhya Pradesh, located in central India. Like much of India, Bhopal have many people who live in poverty, struggling to survive. As is common in much of the third world, multinational corporations, especially big industry, often operates with little or no regard to their cultural, social, or environmental impacts to the land and people. In many cases, local and national governments likewise seem to favor industry over the well-being of their people. Environmental, health, labor, and safety laws are either non-existent or not enforced in most less developed countries like India. To me, this exemplifies the tyranny of economic globalization. Union Carbide's 1984 so-called accident released more than 27 tons of poisonous methyl isocyanate and other toxic gases into the environment, exposing some 500,000 people to deadly gas. It's also important to mention that the factory's chemical release poisoned both farmland crops and livestock, which many people in that area depend upon for survival. In addition, an investigation showed that Union Carbide Bhopal's facilities' safety management practices were largely ignored. If the Indian plant followed proper inspection and maintenance requirements, it is probable that this tragedy would have been prevented. It turns out that none of the six safety systems were functional, and the book, Five Past Midnight in Bhopal, published in 2002 by Warner Books, authors Lapierre and Moreau write about this issue. In brief, needed refrigerant for the methyl isocyanate was turned off, the important flare tower was disconnected, and there were problems with the vent gas scrubber, with a pressure valve, and with a runoff tank. Apparently, the Bhopal plant, under pressure from Union Carbide management to save money, cut corners on needed equipment, monitoring, and safety inspections. As an ecologist working on health and environmental justice cases for much of my professional career, I am very alarmed to know that since the 1984 accident, there have been no serious containment or cleanup efforts either by Union Carbide or Dow Chemical Company, who in 1971 purchased Union Carbide. The abandonment of the chemical industrial facility by Union Carbide left tanks full of toxic chemicals corrode and bust, which resulted in more pollution. Hydrologic test wells have shown The massive volumes of poisonous chemicals have contaminated the drinking and irrigation water in and around Bhopal. This has caused many more deaths, sickness, and further environmental problems. Information from former workers at the Union Carbide plant substantiate that massive amounts of chemicals, including pesticides, solvents, toxic effluents, and hazardous waste, were routinely dumped in and around the factory grounds when the Union Carbide plant was in operation. Some of these deadly substances that are lethal to human health and poison ecosystems included aldecarb, carbaryl, mercury, and several chlorinated chemicals. Human health and ecological impacts resulting from the 1984 gas leak, as well as effects from the continual toxic pollution of soil and water from lack of cleanup, have been well documented from various studies. A report in the highly respected Journal of the American Medical Association verified that not only many people in Bhopal suffered and continued to be sick, but also the children of many victims are themselves affected. Released in 2002, a research lab test reported poisons such as 1,3,5 trichlorobenzene, dichloromethane, chloroform, lead, and mercury have been found in the breast milk of nursing mothers. Other investigations have shown that Union Carbide toxins have entered the food chain, thereby requiring the slaughter of farm animals and destruction of field crops that people in Bhopal depended upon for their food and livelihood. In addition to the community health and environmental issues I briefly commented upon in this program introduction, it is very important to mention the subject of corporate responsibility, or should I say corporate irresponsibility and negligence, for both the horrific events of December 3rd, 1984, as well as the social health and biological impacts that still continue to this day. As far as I'm concerned, Union Carbide's former chief executive, Warren Anderson, who fled prosecution in India and is therefore a fugitive from justice, as well as the legally liable corporation, Union Carbide itself, are criminals. The current owner, Dow Chemical, must also be held accountable since its 1971 acquisition of Union Carbide, which owned the Bhopal factory. The Bhopal legal situation has many issues. A major aspect involves both the governments of India and the United States, where Union Carbide Dow Chemical is headquartered. The conduct, or should we say misconduct, of both governments is an incredible sad story in itself. The judicial systems of both countries over the years have treated this serious and tragic industrial crime like a three-ring circus. Union Carbide's attorneys, and now lawyers for Dow Chemical, have been able to fight both criminal and civil actions all these years. Will there be justice for Bhopal? Last but not least, while the Bhopal India case is a special justice issue in its own right, Bhopal exemplifies the issue of corporate globalization, multinational criminality, and governmental culpability. What happens in the case of Bhopal has great importance and relevance for cultural, social, economic, environmental justice throughout the world. Those of us who care about Mother Earth and the well-being of all life must join the international movement for justice for Bhopal. I wish to now welcome my friend, Mr. Ryan Biodani, a representative of Students for Bhopal, to Wolf Mountain Radio.
Thank you for having me. Like you mentioned, work with the organization Students for Bhopal. My name is Ryan Bodani, and I'm based in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Bhopal is a city in central India. In 1984, they had a terrible industrial disaster. There was a Union Carbide plant that was located there that had a gas leak. The gas that leaked, methyl isocyanate, is one of the deadliest gases that you could imagine. Some of its components were used as chemical weapons in World War I. The gas that leaked spread throughout the entire city of Bhopal. More than 500,000 people were exposed to the gas. Of those, 8,000 people died within the first 3 days. 20,000 have died to date, and about 120,000 have been burdened for their entire lives with permanent health problems. Because the gas reacted with water, when people came into contact with it, say, for instance, in their eyes, many of them were blinded. Other people, their lungs were burned, so they're unable to breathe at a regular rate, and they're plagued with fatigue. Once it had entered the body, the gas spread throughout every major system inside the body. So you have people today that have a variety of health ailments, ranging from cancer, tuberculosis because of their weakened lungs, to endocrine disruption, reproductive disorders, birth defects, and so forth. So the contamination was very severe, and the health implications have been very grave. It's not only an environmental disaster, it's a humanitarian disaster, and it's an environmental justice disaster. Because the gas spread throughout the communities that were closest to the plant, obviously they were worst affected. These are the people that were the poorest in the city. They relied on their physical labor in order to make ends meet. So they were worst affected, and if they were not killed, they were thrust into incredible poverty. The settlement that was eventually arrived at in 1989 provided enough money, in general, for about 3 years of medical care. So when you break this out on a day-by-day basis, you'll find that people were given about the money for a cup of tea per day, which is totally insufficient, as you can imagine. And so these people are now, thrust into even a worse state of poverty than they were before. And it's really a terrible situation.
The deadly and debilitating gas leak of methyl isocyanate and other poisonous chemicals on December 3rd, 1984, as well as the chemical facility's routine practices of dumping toxic effluents and hazardous waste in and around Bhopal during the years the plant operated, not to mention the lack of cleanup of the site and cleanup of the community, is certainly a legal issue of responsibility on the part of Union Carbide and the current plant owner, Dow Chemical. However, the governments of India and the United States are also an important part of this tragedy. What is your view of both the Indian and American government's response to Bhopal?
So as you said, there was two responses, one from the Indian government, the other one from the United States government. In the wake of the disaster, Warren Anderson, who was the CEO of Union Carbide at the time, flew immediately to India. This is something that Union Carbide speaks today about with pride. However, this certainly wasn't looked at as a gesture by the people in Bhopal. He was looked at very specifically as a murderer. And in fact, when he arrived in Bhopal, he was put under house arrest and charged with culpable homicide, which in America is known as manslaughter. It wasn't long before the Indian government intervened and the United States government intervened, and he was set free on a $2,000 bail. He promised in his bail bond to return for any criminal court proceedings. Naturally, once he was safely ensconced in the United States, he did not. There was also other bad behavior on the part of the Indian government. There were clinics that were set up in the immediate wake of the disaster that were providing an antidote to cyanide exposure, which was one of the gases. This antidote is called thiosulfate. However, Union Carbide and the Indian government did not want the public to know, or the medical community to know, that cyanide had been one of the gases that had been released. And so therefore, these clinics were shut down with police force, and the records were taken away, and this antidote, which was effective, was denied to the people of Bhopal, and they were not given it. These are people who are the poorest people of Bhopal, as I mentioned, people who are without political power. And so this was a very callous response on the part of the Indian government. They were not protecting their own people. Instead, they were selling them out to an American multinational corporation. The American government certainly had even less concern for the people of Bhopal. It has done next to nothing. When we're talking about Warren Anderson, who is now a wanted fugitive by the Indian government, he's an international fugitive from justice, and the Indian government has requested his extradition from the United States government, the United States has said no, that they will not turn him over, which is quite a contradiction from their international war on terror. When you think of Bhopal, the first word that comes to mind is terror, the terror of fleeing in the middle of the night, running for your lives, not being able to keep track of your children, being trampled over by animals that are also running for their lives. Can you imagine running in the streets in the middle of the dark night for your life? This is terror. This is exactly what it is. And Warren Anderson was responsible because the disaster need never have happened. This is not an act of God. This was an act of a corporation because none of the safety systems at the plant were functional. Not one of six. They all failed on that night, and it was because of the cost-cutting that Union Carbide had done. So this is, again, another layer of injustice. It's very unfortunate.
From the Hindu tradition of prayer songs called Bhajans, performed by Bina and Pranav Mehta off their Kenyan record CD entitled Cosmic Dawn Bhajans of India. The name of that lyrical meditation was Sanwara. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddushi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Today's program is entitled Justice for Bhopal, India, Industrial Criminals, Union Carbide, and Dow Chemical. I am speaking with my friend, Ryan Bodani, an activist with Students for Bhopal. As most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, on December 3rd, 1984, more than 27 tons of poisonous methyl isocyanate and other toxic gases were released from Union Carbide's factory in Bhopal, India. This gas leak exposed some 500,000 people, crops and farm animals to deadly chemicals. Many have died, many have become critically ill, and even the children of those exposed continue to suffer sickness. In addition, Union Carbide for many years routinely dumped massive amounts of lethal pesticides, toxic effluents, and hazardous waste in and around their chemical plant, thereby causing serious human health and contamination of the environment. The struggle for justice continues. Serious issues of needed site cleanup, human health impacts, biological contamination of drinking and irrigation water, and chemicals affecting crop and soil and farm animals are yet to be totally resolved. The misconduct by industry and the poor response of the Indian and U.S. governments just adds more insult to this incredible global crime. Ryan, Yad Kiddushi Native Center is a member of the international group Pesticide Action Network. Several years ago, I participated in a pan protest at Union Carbide's Charlton, West Virginia plant in support of the Bhopal victims. Union Carbide, now Dow Chemical, told us that their plant in India had the same equipment and safety systems as their West Virginia factory. Since the Bhopal plant is in a third world country, where little if any environmental regulations or worker health and safety laws are in existence, such as the EPA and OSHA requirements in the United States, I would imagine there were great differences between Union Carbide's U.S. plant and the Bhopal, India plant. What is your thoughts on this question?
It was actually very revealing how the story that the corporation told changed as the scale of the disaster became apparent. In the first days, when it was only known that a few hundred people had died, Union Carbide was trying to quiet the public outrage by saying that the plants were in fact the same between the United States and India, and that really, you know, this is not a severe problem because we treat everybody the same. And in fact, what emerged is that the plants were in fact very different. And you can look at this in a very objective manner. You say, well, look at the West Virginia facility. It was computerized. The Bhopal facility was not. Look at the West Virginia facility. Did they have emergency planning and preparedness? They had a worst-case scenario disaster plan. In Bhopal, they did not. In fact, when people were fleeing from the disaster, there was something that was very simple that they could have done, which would have aided them in surviving, and that is putting a wet towel over their mouths and their nose to, you know, prevent the gas from getting into their bodies. But people did not know that this was something that should be done. They did not know because Union Carbide did not inform them. In fact, there were warnings from the workers of the plant 2 years in advance. There were workers that had died, and in fact, the workers' union in Bhopal had publicly put posters up throughout the city warning of the danger that the plant posed to the people of Bhopal. There was a very famous journalist in Bhopal who became famous, unfortunately for the wrong reasons, named Rajkumar Keswani, because he was prescient in his reporting. And he said that this disaster was going to happen. And he wrote a series of articles which were ignored by the powers that be. And he knew that the disaster was a potential something that would, you know, inflict great damage on the city because he had the internal Union Carbide analysis that they had done, which uncovered a number of safety problems that they then did not address.
Ryan, the Bhopal India struggle for justice not only involves cultural, social, economic, and environmental aspects, but very importantly, judicial issues. I feel Union Carbide, and now its new owner, Dow Chemical, as a multinational corporation, have criminal and civil liability as a result of what happened at their industrial plant in Bhopal. It is important to note that Union Carbide fought legal actions and were able to delay legal proceedings for many years. If I remember correctly, the government of India in 1985 created the Bhopal Gas Lake Disaster Act, although the Indian government's actions did not necessarily follow what the victims of Bhopal have wanted. Even still, Union Carbide contested the legitimacy of India's courts. The so-called 1989 settlement is minimal payment for the true cost of not only the industrial gas leak, but also for the years of health and biological pollution impacts and poisoning to the people and environment of Bhopal. Ryan, I'm interested to hear your thoughts about the legal aspect of this struggle for justice.
The disaster happened in 1984, and in fact it was not until 1989, 5 years after the disaster took place, that any money changed hands was actually given to the Indian government. This does not mean that the money was given to the survivors. In fact, it took still longer for the money to reach the hands of the survivors, because the settlement was not made between the victims and Union Carbide. Instead, the Indian government stepped in and passed a law through the parliament which said that they would serve as the sole representatives of the Bhopal victims. Basically, they declared themselves with the power of attorney and the only agency with the power of attorney. Therefore, they entered into secret negotiations with Union Carbide and resolved a settlement for $470 million in 1989. This was a settlement that A, the victims had no say in, and B, was a complete surprise to the victims. And in fact, they were so outraged that they sued. And you can imagine these victims, after 5 years without any sort of financial relief, suing and rejecting a major settlement like this. In fact, they fought it all the way up to the Indian Supreme Court. The Indian court, which had actually overseen the settlement and was not an objective party, resolved that the settlement was fair, just, and equitable. However, they did reinstate the criminal charges which had originally been expunged. This meant that from 1991, both Warren Anderson, the former CEO, and the Union Carbide Corporation itself were officially declared fugitives from justice within the Indian jurisdiction. They are corporate criminals, by definition, and they are wanted for culpable homicide. Warren Anderson faces a jail term of 10 years. Union Carbide is a corporation which cannot be put in prison, but it faces a major seizure of its assets and a major fine. And this is why, like a guilty party, they have fled.
Aren't there so-called international laws or agreements that the multinational corporations must to adhere to? And if so, why hasn't there been, say, United Nations sanctions or the International Court of Justice in The Hague go after Union Carbide? To me, this is a global case of injustice.
That's an excellent question, and you would think that there should be some sort of body which would regulate this type of mass murder behavior. However, unfortunately, there's not. I personally think that this would be an excellent case for the International Criminal Court. However, this does not fall within the jurisdiction of the criminal court, A, because it's a multinational corporation, and B, because the United States has not signed on to the ICC. Therefore, there is no international law which binds the corporation to appear for trial, let alone to stand trial and abide by any judgment which may be arrived at in the Indian court system. Amnesty International, as one of the leading worldwide human rights organizations, has identified Bhopal as the leading example of the corporate abuse of human rights around the world, and they are using Bhopal as the case study for their demand, which they made beginning in 2004, for a new international set of laws which would apply directly to multinational corporations, which would be binding and would fine human rights violations and penalties.
Oh,
Bina and Pradnav Mehta off their Kenyan record CD, Moonlit Taj. The name of that beautiful song was Koi Kanta. I find their music very special because of the way they blend the traditional sitar, tabla, and flute with contemporary instrumental rhythms. You are listening to Yad Kiddushi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. My guest today is Mr. Ryan Bodani. Ryan is an activist with Students for Bhopal. SBA is a fine network of students and supporters of the many victims of the infamous 1984 Union Carbide chemical plant poisonous gas release in Bhopal, India. There are also health and environmental justice issues from the many years Union Carbide routinely dumped toxic chemicals and hazardous waste in Bhopal. Ryan, as a community organizer, I've had the honor to live with and assist various tribal peoples in different places throughout the world fight against so-called development that would endanger their culture and environment. So I am especially interested to hear more about the Bhopal people's movement for justice.
Really, there was a lot of content among the people of Bhopal, as you can imagine, after the disaster. This coalesced into a mass people's movement after the settlement was arrived at in 1989, which, as you can imagine, engendered a lot of outrage because they were not participatory in this decision. They went to the Supreme Court, they exhausted their legal avenues, and from that point on, they engaged in a lot of civil disobedience and mass movements trying to hold Union Carbide accountable. They really were outraged in 2001 when Carbide enacted what they felt was its final disappearing move, where they merged with Dow Chemical and shed their name. And so the Bhopal victims looked at this as their final disappearing act and trying to escape responsibility. And so after that, they formed worldwide coalitions with other groups because Dow Chemical is a worldwide corporation. And they felt that this was really the only way to bring this corporation to its knees. Dow is itself a corporation with a horrible environmental injustice legacy, including Agent Orange, napalm, dioxin, a variety of other pesticides that they have created and spread throughout the world, which have reaped all kinds of death and destruction. So people have joined together in this worldwide campaign against Dow in solidarity with the Bhopal victims and have been campaigning against Dow and the Indian government. This movement is led by the people of Bhopal, and it's the victims of Bhopal that have directed and guided this movement, specifically the women of Bhopal, which is very interesting when you look at people's movements around the world. I think this is one of the best examples of a people's movement that's been led by women. And it's because women have borne the brunt of the health damage that has been caused by these gases. They're the ones who have had to face the reproductive disorders. They're the ones that have borne children that have been born with birth defects. They're the ones that have to bear the social stigma, because nobody wants to marry a woman from Bhopal because they know that they have these health problems, that they will bear children with birth defects, and therefore they cannot marry. They are excluded from the social system, and this is an injustice that even the men have not had to face. So this is a really inspirational movement that has been led by the people of Bhopal.
Ryan, fighting for cultural, social, economic, and environmental justice, especially when confronting governments and large multinational corporations like Union Carbide, can be very dangerous and even life-threatening for grassroots activists, especially in the Third World. The murder of Ken Sawawiwa, the Ogoni tribal organizer fighting Shell Oil Company's deal with Nigeria, or a Mountain Kalinga friend of mine who was killed by Philippine officials for his opposition to the Chico River Dam Project, exemplify what can happen to those who stand up for justice. There are many other cases of intimidation and persecution of human rights and environmental protection activists I could talk about, especially in indigenous peoples' homelands. Would you please talk about the risks, repercussions, and repressions people of Bhopal have faced from their protest movement for justice?
Absolutely. From the very first moment, the Indian government took a very repressive stance, from closing the clinics that were providing an antidote to the cyanide exposure that they had suffered. From that point on, it's been, unfortunately, a very sordid history of repression. people of Bhopal have not had any satisfaction from the political process. In fact, political parties have made promises and systematically ignored them. You would think that a voters pool of 500,000 people would be an attractive thing. However, in India, where corruption is rife, nobody has really been an advocate for the victims. Instead, they have been systematically disenfranchised. They've been ignored, and in some cases, violently repressed. There have been beatings of the community leaders who have been leading these people's movements. And most recently, just a few months ago, when people gathered to demand clean drinking water, the water supply that they have access to has been contaminated by carbide's chemicals. And in fact, the Supreme Court ordered the state government to provide safe drinking water, and they gathered to demand that the Supreme Court order be enforced. These are women and children, again, who have been leading the campaign. About 300 were set upon by police wielding truncheons, who beat the women and mercilessly beat the children, and sent several of them to prison and several of them to the hospital. And this is the kind of repression that, unfortunately, the people of Bhopal have had to face far too often.
I sincerely want to thank you for not only speaking with us today on Wolf Mountain Radio, but for your dedication to the Bhopal struggle. I hope our worldwide listeners may feel encouraged to join the International Campaign for Justice in Bhopal, which Yad Kiddushi Native Center has long supported. Please visit the International Campaign's website, www.bhopal.net. That's www.bhopal.net. As well as your Students for Bhopal's website, www.studentsforbhopal.org, for more information and ways to get involved. Ryan, perhaps a good way to conclude our conversation is for you to share your thoughts about how people can support the International Movement for Justice in Bhopal, especially students who can join Students for Bhopal.
Sure. I think one of the most powerful slogans from Bhopal is that we all live in Bhopal. Bhopal is not only a struggle for the health and the safety of the people of Bhopal, many of whom continue to suffer today, but really it's important on many levels. When you look at corporate accountability, I can't think of a graver example of corporate inaccountability than a corporation being able to escape having taken the lives of 20,000 innocent men, women, and children. When you look at globalization, we refer to Bhopal as the curtain raiser on globalization. This is the disaster that set the stage for the current system of globalization that we have today, where corporations know that they can run away, that they can escape accountability. So this is something that's very important, and fortunately we've had a lot of solidarity from people's movements around the world that have supported the movement for justice in Bhopal. In the last anniversary, which was the 20th, December 3rd, 2004, there were over 300 solidarity events which took place all around the world. There are two primary targets for the campaign. One is the Indian government, and the other one is Dow Chemical. The Indian government, we have several demands. Probably the most important is for safe drinking water, because it's heinous that people still today, 20 years later, are drinking water that is still poisoning them. But 20 years after the world's worst industrial disaster, there is this second tragedy that's going on, and the health impacts are being reflected in the second and third generations of people who are living there. Dow Chemical has a very clear legal and moral responsibility to take care of the cleanup in Bhopal, which has never been done, never been attempted, to provide medical care for the people there, alternate economic opportunities, and to obey the law and face justice, like you would expect any common criminal to appear in court for an open trial before the people that have been affected. So Students for Bhopal in the United States has been mobilizing as a support network students to demand that Dow Chemical be expelled from their schools around the country, like you would a bad student, because Dow Chemical is something that we consider a moral menace, and we don't want our colleges, which we have great pride in, our institutions of learning, tainted by Dow's toxic legacy. So if our colleges have been invested in Dow and own Dow, we think that's reprehensible and we want it to end. We don't want to accept money from Dow that should be going to the people of Bhopal who are dying for lack of it. We don't want Dow recruiting on campus, and we don't want Dow conducting research on campus. We think that this is a really critical way of affecting their bottom line, because Dow relies on colleges and universities. And really, they rely on all of us to believe the best in them. Because when you are a corporation that exclusively gets its profits from products of death that wreak this kind of havoc around the world, people must believe in your good intentions.
and this is something that actually was very successful during the Vietnam War, people withdrew their belief in Dow's good intentions. And they said, Dow is manufacturing napalm. It's a weapon of war that's heinous, and we don't believe that they should be doing this. And Dow was forced to end their production of napalm in the middle of the Vietnam War because people withdrew their consent and there was mass discontent.
You are listening to Yat Kitichi Native Centers, Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
Well, dear friends, thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This program focusing on justice for Bhopal, Industrial Criminals, Union Carbide, and Dow Chemical. We're nearing the end of our broadcast time together, so we shall conclude with a song in solidarity to the Bhopal struggle by Sonia Seigel and Terry Allen off their Smoke Music CD. The name of the song is Flames, Not Flowers. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kinawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Are the women of Bhopal, and this is the story of our struggle. We will fight for justice till the day we die.
We are flames, not flowers. We will not wilt before your corporate power. Oh, we are flames, not flowers. We will not wilt before your corporate power.
The Union Carbide, you cannot hide behind the deadly cloud of cyanide. You gassed our city with your poison factory. Cutting costs on safety, making MSA, using double standards, ultra technology. And you said it would be good for our economy. You ruined our lives, killed our sons and our mothers. And before we could mourn our dead sisters and brothers, you already denied our responsibility for the worst disaster in history.
We are flames, not flowers. We will not wilt before your corporate power. Oh, we are flames, not flowers. We will not wilt before your corporate power.
You made a bargain with our government to drop the charges and take the settlement. The compensation you thought was fair, $500 goes pretty far over there. What is champagne glasses you raise in the air? Cause it only costs you 43 cents per share. Your paltry settlement made your stocks go up, but now we won't give up until your ass is locked up.
We are women of the world. We are flames, not flowers. We will not worship.
Mess up and clean the mess up. The blood we cough up because you're screwed up. You're gonna fess up and clean the mess up.
19 years later, we're still suffering and dying, and you're still claiming trade secrets and you're still lying. 20,000 dead and counting is more than a statistic. We remember every smile, our heartbreaks realistic. More than 100,000 still living here in vain. How can you sit there, tell us all our cries are in vain? Toxic waste dumps around your factory are adding so much insult to our injury. The poison water that we have to drink, y'all. Ask any daughter, she know how much it stinks. You thought the merger with the Dow Company would absolve you of any liability. But for your crimes against humanity, we're gonna bring Dow Chemical to its knees.
The blood we cough up because you're screwed up. You're gonna fess up and clean the mess up. The blood we cough up because you're screwed up. You're gonna fess up and clean the mess up.
Dow has a history, several claims to fame. It was napalm set Vietnam aflame. Agent Orange causes birth defects, and using Durst Man has nasty side effects. Dioxin squirting from every mother's breast worldwide, from the north to the south, east, west. But your corporate man in your ties of silk, you know the horror of mothers feeding toxic breast milk to our beautiful babies, our newborn innocence. This ain't no way to start their life experience. You invade our bodies and our lives knowingly, thanks to downward living poison daily. The blood we cough up because you're screwed up. You're gonna fess up and clean the mess up. The blood we cough up because you're screwed up. You're gonna fess up and clean the mess up.
If the truth be told, we would rather die than have to live like you, where every breath is a lie.
Your corporate culture, for what it's worth, has done more to ruin our planet Earth.
By turning humans into hollow shells, mindless consumers in their homogenous hells.
But in your quest for profit, we refuse to take part. Against all odds, we'll live our lives with joy and heart.
We believe in the power of the human spirit. Raise our voices together so everyone can hear it.